The Doreen Howard, I'm with the Lansing Fisher Body Historical Team. It is October 17th, 2005. We will be interviewing Lee Richardson. Lee, could you please state your name and spell your last name and your address for the record?
My name is Lee Vester Richardson III. My address is 2001 West Kalamazoo Street in Lansing, Michigan, 48915.
Can everyone please state their names for the record?
Doug Rademacher.
John Fidoa.
Marilyn Coulter.
Linda Johnson.
Cheryl McQuaid.
Mike Fleming.
And we are at the Lansing Car Assembly today doing our interview. Let's start out with your seniority date. When did you hire in, and can you tell me a little bit about that very first day?
Yes, it was September 17th, 1977. And I had a few classes to complete my bachelor's degree, and I heard that they were hiring over here. So I came over, and I got here a little late, and the line stretched from the front of Fisher Body, as we call it, from the front of Fisher Body all practically to Verlinden Elementary School. And I said, wow. Looked like an awful long line to me. And so, you know, I was younger back then, so I says, well, I don't know if I want to wait in line, that big long line. So I says, there has to be someone closer in the front of the line that I know that I can start a conversation with. So I kind of jumped the line a bit and went in and made my application. And not only did I apply here, but I applied over at Oldsmobile also. So I got called to work for both of them. So I was naive at the time. I had started working at Fisher Body, so I says, I got my letter from Oldsmobile, says, come in and take your physical. I was like, wow, you know. So I went over there. I was going to work. And it was for the opposite shift, which I was working at Fisher Body. So I went over. I said, I'll work at Fisher Body at night, and I'll work at Oldsmobile in the day. You know, I was naive. So and in the middle of the physical, the lady says, do you work at Fisher Body? I said, yes. She says, son, you can't work at Fisher Body and Oldsmobile at the same time. So I didn't know that. So that was kind of, you know, but they were doing a lot of hiring back at that period of time. My first impression was when I got there, I thought that the cars were moving awfully slow, and everything looked real simple and easy to do until I started doing it. I'd look up and I'm half a mile down the line, you know. So maybe it is moving a little faster than I thought.
Do you remember what your first job was?
Yeah, it was door wires. The wires that make the windows go up and down, all the electrical, you know, wire harness and stuff. And you snapped them and just ran it through the front and plugged it, you know, popped the rubber conduit in, and then you would reach in there and string the wires out and snap them in their appropriate positions. You know, and they weren't really big on equipment, safety equipment back then. You know, reach your hand in there, and I had scratches all up and down my arm. You know, it was the first day.
You're reaching your hand inside a
metal door. You know.
Did you receive any safety equipment when you first started working?
A pair of gloves.
No glasses?
And glasses, yes, glasses. And I had something really impressionable that happened to me, and I was cured of not wearing glasses from then on. A guy had a bundle full of molding, aluminum molding, and he turned like this, turned to his left, and I had my glasses on, thank God. Because prior to that, you know, forget or you sometimes wouldn't wear them. I had them on, and as he turned to the left, I turned to the right, and I could see that metal coming straight from my eye, and it said, and it stopped right on my glasses. I was like, ah! And I was staring right at that metal. I was like, oh, thank you, God, for having my glasses on. So, you know, I was always a stickler for glasses after a while. Even later on, some guys thought I was kind of, you know, hard on them about glasses when I was doing another.
So what department and shift was that in?
It was the second shift in the trim department.
Is that where you stayed? How long did you?
I've been in trim my whole career, my whole time. Never had a desire to work anywhere else.
Lee, where'd you go to high school at?
J.W. Sexton High School.
And where's that located?
On the west side of Lansing, right across the street from Fisher Body.
So you saw this place all through your high school days?
Well, you know, it's kind of funny because actually this place has been a part of my life for, I don't know, as long as I can remember, actually. Even as a child, I used to walk over to West Side Field over here, which is right across Saginaw here, and played, you know, Little League baseball. And we had to walk from Michigan Avenue all the way down, you know, to the end of Fisher Body or on across. And we used to call it the longest building in the world, you know, to a kid, you know, and you're walking. It didn't seem like we'd ever get to the end of it. They had windows in the front of it. Back in those days, open windows, the guys would hang out the windows. They'd throw us gum and stuff, you know. Well, we probably were begging for gum. They'd throw us gum, and yeah. So we moved from across Expressway here to closer to Fisher Body, you know, along Kalamazoo Street, so I could see the building, you know, from our house and from our backyard. So it's always been around, you know. And so my life's kind of been like one circumambulated, don't use that word, experience. I lived at my house here. The high school, the parking lot ran up to my backyard, and then right in front of that was Fisher Body. So, you know, it's always been there.
Outside of thinking that it's the longest building, was there anything that you ever thought about the work that went inside the building?
I just knew that they were building cars. You know, I never, and then later on, I never expected to actually work there. You know, that wasn't programmed. You know, mm-hmm. But you know, it's been a blessing though, and you know, overall, you know.
Lee, what was it like growing up in an environment where there was a factory right next to your house? Did it affect your yard, your house, or your goings on in your community?
Well, the biggest thing that sticks out is late 60s, early 70s was the smell, the paint smell.
Can you describe what?
Kind of a sweet smell. It was a real sweet, sugary smell in the early days. You would think a lot of times that it was, in the spring, you would think that it was apple blossoms or something like that, okay? And as time went on and different processes in the paint got going, the smell changed from sweet to, you know, caustic, kind of chemically type of smell. You know, it wasn't constant. A lot of it depended on which way the wind was blowing, and you know, whether a lot of times the clouds would keep the smell down so it couldn't escape or something, and it turned to that. And I guess there was kind of we had one period there where there was an I would liken it to an acid rain experience where something in those chemicals came down and landed on everyone's cars in the neighborhood and actually peeled the paint. So, you know, it was the question of, well, if it's peeling the paint on the cars, I wonder what kind of human damage it's doing, you know. There was three or four guys along Kalamazoo Street that had died of cancer and had blood disorders. You know, and you kind of wondered, was there any kind of a correlation, don't use that word, between the two, you know, so.
You touched base on your educational background. You said you went to Western?
Yes.
So how did you go from being in college to Fisher Barney?
Well, I had a couple of classes to complete at Western for my bachelor's, and I really needed some money, too, and I heard they were hiring. So my plan was to work at Fisher Body for a period of 6 months to a year and make some money and go back to school and finish my degree. But sometimes life becomes life, and I remember my mother saying, "You're going to get hired in there, and you're not going to complete your degree." And I told her, "Mom, I may not do anything else in life, but I promise you I'll complete it." And I did. I was working nights, and I was driving to Kalamazoo in the daytime, taking classes and studying, you know, in between, and taking some stuff to work and study at lunchtime sometime, or break time, or whatever could squeeze in. And so it wasn't in the plans to be a, you know, a career type of thing. But I remember the fellas, I told them my plans. I said, "Well, I'm only going to be here 6 months to a year." They said, "Oh, no, you'll be here."
So what was your field of study?
Well, communication arts and science, and a minor in business marketing. And so the guy said, "Well, you'll be here." I said, "No, I won't." So then I came to them and I told them I was getting married. They said, "Oh, we know you'll be here." Then I got married and my first child came. They said, "Oh, we know you'll be here." So really, the time just went by. And the next thing I know, I looked up, you know, I had 10 years worth of seniority in here. And I said, "Wow, you know, we could either leave with 10 years of seniority, you know." And I said, "But, you know, we've got 10 years vested." So I stayed, you know.
Did you say your mother didn't want you to work at
General
Motors?
No, she just thought I would get distracted with the money and make, that I was making and not completed, you know. They were professional people, but they always figured, you know, an honest living, whatever you're doing, if it was honest, there's nothing wrong with it, you know, and I always appreciated that in them and stuff.
What kind of jobs have you had here in the plant?
Well, mostly in trim and production. Mm-hmm. And a little bit of I was an EPG leader at the time, Employee Participation Group leader. Personal minister to some people, in a way. I'm on the personal mission of helping people, encouraging people, and that kind of thing. People felt that they could come to me and confide in me and talk to me, and so. And also I've had a couple of times where I was a supervisor. And so, you know, I've seen it from both sides, you know. And I still get teased about it and everything, you know. I always tell people that my jury on that issue were the people that had worked for me.
Tell a little bit about the transition that it took to go from a production person anywhere in per diem.
Mm-hmm. Well, you see, first thing that dawned on me was that, you know, you don't see the business side of this, you know, if you're hourly. You know, you don't even have a clue. You know, you have conceptions of what, you know, you think the other side is like. You know, it's kind of like anything else. Until you've been there, you don't really know, you know. And some of the issues that management had were legitimate. And some of the issues that hourly had were legitimate. So the problem sometimes was finding the balance between the two and working it out between the two, you know. I always thought that they should have a program where hourly people could shadow the supervisor for a week, maybe two, and actually let them participate in some of the things that they do and some of the things that they go through. I think I always thought that would promote a better understanding between the two sides so that they could see things. And, you know, vice versa, you know, let them come and work on the assembly line for a good week and let them break in for 2 or 3 days, you know.
Lee, you had an opportunity to work on both sides of the table. Lansing Car Assembly, Fisher Body, BLC, has always been commended for their outstanding workforce and their quality. What would you attribute that to, being that you've been on both sides of the table?
I don't know. I think the biggest thing is, I think it's the tradition of craftsmanship and the work ethic of the hourly workforce. I think this generation was raised in the work ethic of, if you're going to be a ditch digger, be the best ditch digger. You know, I think all of our parents have told us that, you know, in one form or another, you know. And I think the work ethic and the tradition of craftsmanship and the relationship also with the union and management has had here, you know, it's compared to some other places and some of the other things you've heard and stuff, the people here have tended, for the most part, to try to work together to put out the best product that they could for, you know, the ultimate consumer. You know, I think that's it.
When you hired in, were there any special things that happened to you as a new hire? In terms of Frank's initiations?
We were naive and they knew it. They would just tell us all kind of things, you know, like go get your turkey down at the garage, that kind of thing. The discipline system, discipline procedure to me was, it was kind of hard for me to believe it. You know, I thought that high school, the discipline procedure in high school, was a lot tougher than the one over here. And they, it was a verbal warning, a written warning, 3 days or something. You know, so I thought that was kind of lenient. I said, "Oh, they give you that many chances?"
So you said you always worked in the trim department. Did you work in the same areas? Did you go from one job to another?
Just basically from one job to another. When it was all said and done, I just about practically done everything that, you know, could be done in the trim department.
Which one would you consider was your best job?
Any job that involved every other car. You know, instead of one car after another.
And why was that?
Because you could pace yourself. You could get so proficient at your job that you would do that car, and you would have a gap of time in between. My, how things have changed. You know, now you don't have time to. Every second is accounted for. You know, every step, every movement.
Now your body doesn't have recovery time.
Yeah, the bodies are 51 years old now, and they don't recover like they do.
So was that due to changes in processes that have occurred in the trim department that made it so that you had less time to do your job? Or what was the changes that happened within the department,
you know,
that made it?
General Motors had quite a bit of people working for them, so sometimes they had people on, you know, on top of people. And then as times changed and with the market-driven economy that we have and shareholders' concerns and stuff and the dollar being the bottom line, then it they cut out a lot of people and they added work. And, you know, it basically sacrificed people's bodies for, you know, the dollar, you know, shareholder concerns. So,
the changes that were made were not good for the employees as far as
the
amount of work that they had to do increased?
Right, physically, no. Faster and more work, you know, and repetitive and fast. And more. Now, ergonomics came in, and it helped with some of that. That was really important. You know, I used to put side body moldings on and put door panels on. And another fellow and I were talking about this the other day. I said, can you believe we used to put side body moldings on that we'd snap them up underneath the hooks? And all we had on was gloves, and we would take our hands and go pop, pop, and pop them on with our hands. You know,
you can
imagine what
that's
doing to our wrists. Yeah, basically. And then they progressed from that to they gave us these padded gloves. It had padding on it, you know, but you're still the force is still hit, you know, jarring it anyway. So the ergonomics was really that was great. One early job I had, which I walked in, it was putting wheelhouse moldings on the trim that went around the wheel, the silver, aluminum, whatever, chrome, and there was a metal floor, and they had little carts that were on the floor, and I walked up, and I saw those guys sitting down on those little carts down on the floor in the little metal runway and scooting like that and rolling, and I thought that was the funniest thing I'd ever seen. Down on the ground doing that, and the car going by and going like that, you know. So this was pre ergonomic days, you know, and they weren't into elevating the lines and that thing where you type of thing, you could just stand up, and as it came by you, you could actually just stand up and do your job. So I thought that was kind of amusing.
Did you get to do that job?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, so you did do the scoot,
oh,
scoot,
yeah,
with the little cart?
Yeah.
About the size of a shoe shine cart. I remember well myself with the clamps and the screws. And
yeah, that was quite a job.
So. Lee, you are a black man. I would like you to share the environment that you faced when you hired in. Was there, were you accepted, or was there any challenges with the people, and has it changed over the years that you've worked here?
There were, at the time I hired in, there were still a couple of, you know, there were a few old school type of thinking, you know, whites that were in here, guys, or good old boys, as they would call them, you know, as we would call them, and that was code for, you know, they were, you know, a little prejudice or something, you know, and some of it was just, subtle things, you know, just, they would ask, what time is it? You might say, it's 10:12, and that might not be good enough. They would turn to another, to a white person and say, well, what time you got, you know? I say, hey, I just told you it was 10:12. Things like that. I can say, for the most part, there wasn't a lot of that, you know, just maybe little subtle things and stuff. There were some people that were my age, and, you know, it was a culture shock for them, because some of them were coming from smaller communities. They had never had much interaction with, you know, people of color or anything. So, you know, and I kind of at times felt like, you know, it was kind of an opportunity to, you know, to educate or to teach and stuff, you know. And then I've seen people turn around, recognize that, you know, whether it's just a person, you know. There was just a lot of subtle things, differences, you know, way someone would look at you or, you know, or think you were, you know, dumb or something like that.
Lee, in most of your departments that you worked in, were you ever at ever times the only person of your race working in areas? Or did you get to work with a lot of people like yourself?
No, usually it was just either like one or two, you know, blacks in our department. Maybe a Mexican person or something, but no, it's mostly, it's, you know, pretty much you see a couple of us, you know. And I used to count how many black people or something, and I wouldn't just start with my department, but I would start from trigger point all the way to the end of line, and I would, you know, call up with the whole of maybe about 8, 10, 12 at the most. And I remember getting a discussion with a Caucasian fella about, this was back when the quota thing was coming up, you know, there was a big issue of quotas and stuff, and just giving, you know, blacks jobs to meet the quota and so forth. And I told him, I says, look at this whole trip department. I said, it's not quotas. I said, no one's taking anyone's job and stuff. I said, I don't see a whole lot of black people up and down this line, you know.
Do you think that there's much of a change today?
No, not really. There's a number of factors I would think that would probably lead to that. And I know there were some that had opportunities but didn't stick. And the numbers are down, you know.
But by and large, after 28 years, not much has changed.
No, not really, no.
Back to, you said trigger point. Why don't you tell us what trigger point is to the end of the line? And you mentioned 12, that you counted 12 individuals out of a number of how many?
Oh, geez, I don't know. There was about, what, six, they had about six departments with about 30 or 40 people to a department. So let's just say about 300 people in all a trim or something, and not 12 blacks out of 300, and maybe 12. One time it was below 12. I was keeping count, you know. Mm-hmm. And, you know, no, we've made some gains in this country, you know, race relation wise, but we still have a long way to go. A lot of racism, a lot of times, is not is not overt racism, but it's could be covert racism or underneath racism. And then some of it is, it's not that people are out to be mean or anything, but a lot of times it, you know, if you're picking someone for a job or something, it's quite natural to pick someone who is like you, you know, who looks like you, and that kind of thing, you know. And you might overlook someone that doesn't look like you, you know. And so I think that's part of it too, you know.
Now, you came in 77. Was there a lot of females here at that time?
There were a few, and more of them came, I think. They started coming more and more into the workforce and stuff. You know, I could relate to them because they were, in a sense, a minority too. And they had different issues, which they had to deal with. Not only were they a minority group, but they were also women, you know. A lot of your misconceptions of what a woman is like or what a woman could do, you know, came into play. Sexism came into play. But they were good workers. They worked just like any man, you know.
Were you ever involved in any layoffs or any strikes in the time frame that you were here?
One strike. I've only been laid off, I think, maybe twice in all our time. And there was one strike that lasted for a few days, if I'm correct. It was workforce. It's been lucky, you know, compared to a lot of other ones. You know, there's not been very long periods of work, not for our group anyway, 77's group of work stoppage, you know.
Have you gotten many long-standing relationships from inside the plant and so insofar as friends?
Yeah. I'd say a couple, yeah.
Some of the types of things that you do outside of work?
Well, go and actually see them outside of here. You know, play golf with some people. Actually, you know, go over to their house. You know, saw their children grow up. You know, but usually it's pretty much to a few people.
Where you work at, did they have dinners? How do they do their holidays? What type of things happen in your areas?
It's always been kind of like a family, you know. And we had dinners, someone's birthdays. People around here always, you know, wanted to recognize a person's, you know, birthdays, and you know, if they had a child, you know, they made sure. If there was a death in the family, you know, I know.
What type of things would they do for people when they had deaths in the family?
Well, they would go around and collect money and put it in an envelope with a card. You know, not just in our department, but they would go all over. Do you know so-and-so, his dad died, you know. That's what they did for me when my father passed. You know, I told them they didn't have to do it. I didn't want the money. But it was a nice gesture.
Everyone treated everyone as family?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. I had my 50th birthday party. I came in and there was a table with crock pots and baked beans and chicken breast and my vegetables. And I says, now this something. They could have told me they were having a dinner. I would have brought something. And then I went to my bench and they had a button about somebody being 50 and they had the black balloons above me. And you could have bought me for a nickel. You know, I was like, oh, you know. And I was really touched, you know. My eyes almost watered. Yeah, they did. I didn't want anybody to see that. I'm such a softy, you know. I'll cry at a drop of a dime and stuff. So, yeah, that was really touching, you know, all day long, you know. And I just thought that was outstanding, that they would think of so much of me to go through all that trouble to have such. That was an extravagant birthday party for me.
Levy, I'd like for you to talk about some of the things you do outside of Fisher Body just for a moment. You did say some of the things earlier. But you are a member of a fraternity, and
yes,
you do things with kids, if I'm not mistaken. Would you talk about that?
I've been involved with Big Brothers and Big Sisters and stuff, and I've had a couple of children. And try to have a positive influence on their life. And, we used to keep in touch, and I haven't heard anything within the last couple of years, but they, you know, they graduated from high school. Both young men graduated from high school. Didn't get into any legal trouble because both of them were from single-parent household. They graduated. One went to the military and stuff, and he seemed to have done fine in life. That was a good experience. I've been a commissioner on the Martin Luther King Holiday Commission. I did that for a number of years, and appointed by the mayor to be on that commission. And worked with that, and Currently, I'm president of Alpha Phi Alpha Fraternity Incorporated. It's the oldest black Greek letter organization. It was started in 1906. We will be celebrating our 100th anniversary next year. It was founded at an Ivy League school, Cornell University, in Ithaca, New York, by seven young black males who saw a need for banding together for camaraderie and basically to survive, you know, the academic world back then, you know. And there weren't, I think there weren't that many blacks in colleges back in 1906, you know. There were only, maybe 1,000 at that time. And so we work with a group of young men called Gentlemen of Distinction, and we've run them through modules on everything from resume writing to personal responsibility and things like that. And that's good. I've been on the West Side Neighborhood Association board member, and actually I was on when we were trying to work out a compromise with General Motors about their air quality and working with the neighborhood with that. And that was an interesting process. They worked fairly well with the neighborhood, and but it wasn't automatic or easy. But we thought that they should live up to their corporate responsibility that they have to the neighborhood. And since they instituted the new smokestacks or stacks that emit the stuff into the air, it's been markedly different and pleasant, almost undetectable. But, you know, I always wondered why, you know. Why, if you knew that was a problem, why would you take so long to do it? Why would you have to be prodded to do it, you know? Bottom line is money, you know, everything's money.
Back to the fraternity real quick. Don't you all give awards out yearly?
We give a Martin Luther King Citizenship Award to, you know, outstanding students that have contributed to the community and community work. We give a scholarship to Davenport University to students that are matriculating from high school or adult ed to Davenport University and LCC. That's what we do.
Lee, given the fact that you're a resident of this community, that you've grown up with Fisher Body, Lansing Car Assembly in your neighborhood, how do you feel as a resident knowing that this building, that this longest building, is going to be leaving your neighborhood?
For me, it's nostalgic. You know, it really didn't dawn until a few weeks after we shut down May 6th, you know, and I started kind of looking at the place kind of like, you know, reminiscing. And it's funny because once it was over and you looked at the building and you started reminiscing, it was interesting that you didn't think about the bad things that happened or the tough times that you had in it or interpersonal wars that you had with some supervisors or individuals on the line, you know. All I thought about were the good things, you know. And I thought that was good, that if you could, after 28 years, you were leaving, you were only thinking about, you know, the good things that happened, you know. I thought that was good. I'm looking forward to them developing that and working with the neighborhood and coming up with something that would be good, you know. Maybe some type of mixed housing. I was talking to a gentleman that was aspiring for a certain political office yesterday about that. I wanted to really hammer it home with him that, you know, ask the people what they want.
Well,
What's your favorite memory?
My favorite memory of being here? I don't know if I have any one particular favorite memory, but just a collection of good memories. I think the relationships that, you know, I've had with people here and stuff, and some of the conversations that you've had, the support. There was really a lot of support here, really. If you had problems or challenges, you know, maybe at home or with your children or something, there were people here that, you know, you knew who you could actually go to. You said, well, come on, man, you know, let's go out to lunch and we'll talk about it, and, you know, that kind of thing.
I want to ask you a question. You graduated from Sexton, which is right next door. After you were here for a period of time and got comfortable with the plant and knew your way around through Trim because you never went anyplace else, was there ever a time that you found yourself on the roof or in the windows watching any of the football games or any of the sports activities?
Yeah.
Can you talk about that? Explain to us how that worked.
Well, if you went up in 3X and stuff and you could go out on the roof and look over at Sexton High School and watch the game, you know. I had a bet with an East Lansing person who worked here from East Lansing, and we'd go out there and look and see what the score was, you know. And you could tell what was happening.
Were there more than one or two people watching the game?
Yeah, there'd be a number of people up there watching, you know. You'd go and watch as long as you could, and you'd go back and do what you had to do, and you'd come back out and check out what the score was. You know. But it's a large area up there on the roof.
So did that become a Friday tradition, did it?
Yes, it was. It was a tradition. You had people here that children went to Eastern, so when Eastern was playing over there, the Eastern crowd would go up on the roof and look over there and see what the score was. Or for Waverly, Eastern, whoever was playing each other, you had a representative from each school up there, you know, watching.
Well, Lee, you said you looked out the window. Have you ever thought back about the people? This plant's been here since 1922, and the school's been there for quite some time. And you grew up in the school. You think about the people that looked out the window at you, and here you looked out the window at the youngsters today, and this plant's going to close. There's going to be nobody looking out the window at those kids, and there's, you know, you didn't recognize it as an opportunity for a job. You didn't say you were ever planning on coming here, but mm-hmm. what's your thoughts on that? Is it?
Well, it's a different world that we live in now, you know. Just overall, you know, everyone wasn't meant to go to a 4-year university and go through that process. And actually, in the future, that's really not the route to go unless you're really specialized, or if you're going into business. It's really maybe not. You might not want to go into business unless your daddy owns a company, then you can do that. But the world has changed so much now, you know. It's like that book by Friedman called The World is Flat Now, with all the changes in technology and everything, and business-wise, world, it's not just a local economy or a national economy, but it's a world economy, you know. And who knows, because we're in the early stages of it, you know, where it's headed, you know, whether it's either opportunities or threats, depends on how we want to look at it. But the jobs of the future are in trades, you know, whether you're a plumber, millwright, electrician, building, construction. These are the jobs of the future, technical and trades. And we're not talking about little money either. You know, we're talking money that what considered, you know, middle income earners on up would be making. Yeah, I feel for the children though. I do, you know. They just can't just go and make, you know, this kind of money, you know, and for long periods of time. You know, it has to be some training or schooling involved somewhere, you know. It's tougher on them, I think, than it was for us.
Is there anything at all that you can think of that you want to share with us before we wrap things up here?
No, it's been fortunate to have a job. It may not always been what you want it to be, or may not have been too glamorous or anything, but overall, it's been a good experience, and I've just been blessed to work with a lot of good people. You know, they more than make up for, you know, some of the other people that you may not have had, you know, as good experiences with in majority, you know. It's really, I think the biggest thing that sticks out above everything else to me are the people, you know, salt of the earth, hardworking people with good work ethic, caring people. And I think that's what has kept this workforce buoyed, is that the support that the people and the individuals in here that we've kept each other buoyed up and supported each other.
Thank you.
Thank you, Lee.
Thank you.
Thanks, Lee.
Thank you.